Ladies and gentlemen, please rise for the playing of our national anthem.
Baseball fans, you're listening to Babes, Babes. Welcome back to Babes, Babes. This is our fifth episode, and we are so sorry we've been a little MIA. Baseball started, so not sorry about that. We really don't want to miss any games, and we've been busy. Mads is now the media manager for the Penn State Nittany Lions, which is so exciting. I want to hear more about
it. Thank you.
And Kelsey's been busy with her podcast, Peace, Love, and Baseball. She's also been traveling a little bit to watch her Cards. But we're happy to be back and bringing you all the latest, greatest baseball news. So let's get started with Around the Horn.
Let's do it.
All right. So I had to think on this one a little bit, but I'm going to go with my second choice, which is, what is your favorite baseball movie?
Oh, that's a great question. My friends and I, at Penn State Baseball, were talking about this a few days ago, and the popular answer was The Sandlot, and I love The Sandlot, but my answer would probably be A League of Their Own, which actually fits this podcast. And then I love Major League. So those two are up there for me.
Yeah, I love those.
Yeah, A League of Their Own is definitely my favorite. I feel like I could quote that movie very well. I watched it so much growing up. And I've actually heard talks, well, they made it into a TV show, right? Like a TV series on Amazon.
Yeah.
And I've actually heard ramblings that it could be made into a stage musical, which I think would be so cool.
You should try out.
Right?
Absolutely.
I could be a catcher. I can't be a catcher, but I could play one. How about that?
Yeah.
I would definitely write in for you to, win that, to be that, role.
Yeah, there's a lot of great ones, but I think that one is the one that I have watched multiple times. I'm not actually a big movie person. And so I more so that I just don't watch the same movie over and over again, but that is one of the few movies that I could watch a million times over.
Yeah.
What about you?
It's The Sandlot. It has to be The Sandlot. That came out when I think I was four. So I just grew up on it, And so it, coincidentally, they're having their 30th anniversary this year, or they just had it. And they are coming to Omaha for the College World Series and doing a little show, question and answer.
Oh, that's so cool.
Show, yeah. And so I'm trying to get tickets for that. I'm on a list to, be the first to find out when they go on sale or whatever. So I'm really hoping I get to go to that.
That'd be so fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I also really love Trouble with the Curve. With Clint Eastwood and who's the girl? I can't remember who his daughter is, but he names her Mickey after Mickey Mantle.
Yeah.
And she is a lawyer in the beginning of the movie, and then she goes back to visit her dad in the summer, and she ends up becoming a scout, because that's what he is. He's a scout, and Justin Timberlake is in it, and they fall in love at the end.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen that.
Oh my god, you have to watch it.
It is good.
I also love Fever Pitch.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I do love Fever Pitch, even though it's about the Red Sox beating the Cardinals. I'm, you know, you brought it up, so I'm just going to say it. I love Fever Pitch.
That is a good one. I haven't seen that forever.
It was on MLB Network or something one night recently, like a month or so ago before the season started. Yeah. I think there was supposed to be a spring training game and it was canceled for some reason and Fever Pitch was on. I was like, don't tell Cardinals fans I'm watching it.
All right. So from now on, when your team has a game day off, like that's our goals. We have to pick a baseball movie to watch and then we can come back and report about it.
Deal.
Yeah. I like that.
Okay. Well, let's move into our main segment. Today, we are talking about women in baseball, and not just women in baseball, but women in coaching roles. So I'm going to kick it off, I'm going to kick it to Kelsey to kick us off.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about this topic because I am not a baseball coach, but I am a coach. I'm a personal trainer. I'm a group fitness coach, and coaching and like leadership in general is something that is very fascinating to me, something that I'm always striving to get better at. I've read a ton of leadership books and coaching books and listened to lots of podcasts and stuff about it. And so it was really fun to learn about women in this space, specifically in baseball, and the impact that they're making. And the first one that I'm going to tell you about today is Christina Whitlock, who is the first uniformed coach for the St. Louis Cardinals organization. And she is at High A this year with the Peoria Chiefs. And Peoria is actually my hometown in central Illinois. So I grew up just outside of Peoria. And that's where I grew up going to minor league baseball games and where Albert Pujols got his start as well. So Christina Whitlock is a single mother.
She's like near and dear to your heart.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Yes. This is she just represents everything I love, right? Everything that I grew up with. So Christina Whitlock is a single mother to two boys. Her husband, Brian, sadly passed away in 2002, but she has over 20 years of coaching experience that includes time at the collegiate and the international levels. Whitlock was interviewed on her background and her love of the game by the Peoria Journal Star, the newspaper that Kelsey Bird has also been featured in a number of times. she was interviewed by Dave Emanian of the Peoria Journal Star, and Christina is quoted saying, "I was born a Navy brat in San Diego, and I went to 7 elementary schools as her military family moved around." She said, "I grew up listening to Beach Boys concerts at Padres games, some Dodgers too. Later, I was a Braves fan in college." She went to college in South Carolina. She says, "I loved Javi Lopez because he was a catcher. I had his poster in my dorm room." She played baseball in Little League, and she continued with baseball as opposed to softball through age 14. And she says that she only ultimately switched to softball because she wanted to get a scholarship to go to college. And there was much more of the reality of her continuing with baseball or that sport by going the softball route. So as a softball player, she played at the University of South Carolina, and she was a 2-time All-American catcher, and she helped lead them to the Women's College World Series in 1997. She also spent time as a member of the U.S. national softball team. SportsKita.com reports on Whitlock's background, writing that Christina Whitlock graduated from Converse College with a bachelor's degree in psychology and a master's degree in education in 2000. She started as an assistant coach at the University of South Carolina Upstate. For the 2000 season, she worked with the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga as an assistant coach. And then Whitlock coached at the high school level for several years after leaving Chattanooga before she ultimately returned to college as an assistant coach at Mercer University in 2007. After she left Mercer, Whitlock coached the Le Moyne College Dolphins from 2009 to 2012 and the Lander University Bearcats from 2013 to 2015. And in 2016, she ultimately returned to her alma mater as a volunteer assistant coach at South Carolina. I think what's interesting too is the thing that a lot of people don't know is that a lot of these coaching positions are volunteer positions, or they're like very part-time positions. And the thing about people, like people who are truly passionate about coaching, that I've learned over the years is the majority of them will do it for absolutely no money, and they have trouble like asking or expecting for money for it, even though like it's just such a special skill and and their time is so valuable. Anyway, Whitlock took a break from collegiate coaching for a few years before she returned in the spring of 2019, and she coached the Furman University Paladins. She has worked as a coach for various organizations in addition to her high school and college coaching. She volunteered as a pitching coach for the British Softball Federation from 2017 to 2020, and she was a softball skills instructor for the Apex Athletic Performance from 2017 to 2020. And then she was also a head baseball coach for Stars and Stripes Sports from 2017 to 2020. Christina Whitlock was appointed as the fourth coach in the minor league system by the St. Louis Cardinals in 2020. We all know what happened then, right? This role was going to combine coaching and scouting, and it was designed to provide participants with introduction to working in professional baseball, because this was going to be her real first step into working in professional baseball. But the minor league season was canceled due to that little pandemic that we had before she was given her assignment for the season. So throughout the pandemic, she didn't let that stop her. She by no means thought her chance was over. She continued to be on the lookout for other roles with her ultimate aim of becoming like a pitching instructor, a manager, or working in the front office or in player development. So in 2021, she ends up taking on more professional scouting on her own to widen her experience and strengthen her skills while things are still kind of in flux in the minor league systems. Daniel Guerrero of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch reports that Christina was a mentee of the late Cardinals scout Charles Peterson, who she felt was the most influential in her coaching journey. Peterson actually passed away in 2020 after being hospitalized with COVID-19. And he was the scout that was involved with the signing of the 2020 first round pick, top prospect Jordan Walker. She is quoted saying about him, "I had a sense of achieving something for him. And so I was really hoping I made him proud," in regards to her breaking in to being the first female on the field coach for the Cardinals. So the minor league baseball season is canceled. The future is uncertain, but she knew the opportunity would come again. She had her foot in the door. Nearly 3 years later, she gets a phone call from the director of the farm system, Gary LaRoche, who let her know that she was going to be the fourth coach for Class High A Peoria in 2023. So in her role for 2023, she works alongside the recently hired hitting coach, another woman, Casey Chenoweth. And she believes that her experience as a tech fellow with the Cardinals complex in 2022, which is that role kind of designed to get your foot in the door and introduce you to the professional baseball system, is going to be beneficial in breaking down the data and the analytics, which is a big part of her current role with the High A team. The Peoria coaching staff met regularly through Zoom as they led up to spring training. And even though there's obviously a lot of history that comes along with this hire for the Cardinals, Whitlock says that she didn't want the first meeting to include any kind of special treatment or recognition of it. And she says that all the other women in baseball would prefer it that way as well. She's quoted as saying, "We didn't come into the game for people to make accommodations for us. We're coming in to make an impact, just as any other coach would be coming in, to make an impact, to be a part of the team. So I think that that's where we hope to move in the direction and where this is the norm." Whitlock considers the best part of her job so far is the opportunity to meet and learn from others who have spent their lives working in the game. I thought this was cool too. She spoke on her coaching philosophy, and she's quoted in the Peoria Journal Star saying, "I like helping athletes to prepare on game day. That piece of it, you are also teaching young people important things on the field and for life." And that just really summed it up for me as a coach, from a coach, because yeah, it's about what's going on in the moment. It's about helping people perform for a specific thing. But when you talk to players or actors or even students, like the things that they take away from the coaches, the teachers, the leaders in their life often last far past, you know, that one moment that they were with them. So
absolutely.
Right on, Christina.
Yes, I love that. That makes me think, you know, a lot of these females who are getting in these coaching roles have backgrounds in psychology or sports psychology. And I think that's their like shoe in, you know, is that it's like they have to go the extra mile and learn that side of it, because, you know, it's just an extra credential that will get their, you know, foot in the door. But without these like going around, going the extra mile and going outside of the box, it's like they're not you're not getting in. So it's fascinating. Yeah, but sports psychology has always been so fascinating to me. And as an athlete growing up, I had such different experiences with the different coaches that I played for. Like where, you know, like a coach couldn't get anything out of me. And then there was my dad who like was just so encouraging and so patient, and that coaching style like worked for me. So
it really does make all the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know if you guys have watched Ted Lasso at all, but the whole premise of Ted Lasso is that like that character comes in to be the coach of a football or an American soccer team. And he is not, he knows nothing about the game of soccer. And it's all about like the coach that he is and how much more there is than just knowledge of the sport to bring to any given scenario. So that is a really good point.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense when you look at all the, you know, former athletes that then try to go into like coaching positions, but maybe they don't have like the leadership skills or, you know, that side of it.
Yeah.
And so they just totally flop. But
yeah, it is a separate skill set for sure.
Matt, do you want to go next?
Oh, sure, I will.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's okay. I was just going to say it's something people don't really like realize when they're thinking of coaches, like that skill set that they have to have. It plays a big part. So anyway, next up, I have Rachel Holden, who is a hitting coach for the Chicago Cubs. She was actually hired. I know I'm kind of like giving you a sneak peek of someone else's coach, but I know, Jonna, you have Rachel Belichick. I think that's how you say it. I don't want to say it wrong. You have her, who's, I won't get into that, but just want to say this Rachel Holden was hired on the same exact day as our Yankees Rachel, which is pretty cool. Yeah. In 2019. So before coaching, she was a four-time All-American in softball, college softball. She played at Marshall and she took up coaching after she stopped playing. She found a gender and parity issue in coaching, which was, you know, hard for her, hard for anyone. And she was able to just push through, and it's like super inspiring the way she just like didn't let it stop her. It was mostly in the recruiting system, I read, the gender parity issue. And she went on to make her own company called Holden Fast Pitch, which I also thought was super cool. She just used like all her training. She used her training methods and her skill sets to, I think it's like a training academy or like kind of drawing a blank, but I read a lot about it. But I thought it was super cool that she's like doing all this and she's the hitting coach for the Cubs now.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It's crazy how recent all of this has happened too.
And I feel like a lot of stuff was on the brink right before the pandemic. And then like maybe these women were getting into minor league systems and then the minor league, you know, had to cancel their season. So it is fascinating to see how they like all found their way back in.
Yeah. After. And then she obviously found, I wonder if that's like a part of why she founded her company and kind of kept herself busy and kept establishing herself because of those years where there was just less structure for them.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then I will, since you mentioned, I'll start with Rachel Belkovic. She is the manager. She's the manager for the Tampa Tarpons, which is the Class A minor league team for the Yankees. I love her because she grew up, like, I love her obviously because she's who she is, but she grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, where I live. So, kind of a fun little connection there. She started as a catcher in, for the softball team at Creighton University. And then she later transferred to the University of New Mexico. She received her bachelor's in exercise science and then her master's in kinesiology. In 2012, she was hired by the Johnson City Cardinals. So that's your Cardinals Rookie League affiliate. And she just had a temporary contract there. So she started on a temporary contract as their strength coach. And then she later assumed a full-time role with them. And then in 2016, the Houston Astros hired her as their Latin American strength coach. So she learned Spanish just so she could apply for this role. Yeah. And so that just goes back to like what we were saying earlier, which is like all the, you know, they really had to like add these extra credentials that would just like set them apart from everyone else. It's crazy to me, like the extra lengths they had to go to break into the industry. And we're talking,
learning another language is no joke too. Like, I'm just so impressed by people
who I know
speak conversationally. Right, in multiple languages. It's
like
wild.
Because her bachelor's and master's weren't enough. Like, she went the extra mile. So then they later promoted her to their class double A strength and conditioning coach. And then she moved to the Netherlands for a year. And then when she returned in 2019, that's when the Yankees signed her to a minor league hitting coach deal. But then the pandemic hit in 2020. So with that season being canceled, she then moved to Australia and she coached in their Australian Baseball League. And then she came back. And then in 2022, the Yankees announced her as their low A Tampa Tarpons. But so this made her the first female to manage a major league affiliate team. And prior to that, she was the first female hired in a strength and conditioning role. So she has broke like several barriers as first female. But back in 2013, she was just working at Lululemon and just hoping that something would like catch on, you know, somebody would snag her up. She applied for 15 different teams and she didn't hear back. So she changed her name on her resume from Rachel to just Ray. And then she, instead of having on there that she was a Division I softball catcher, she changed it just to Division I catcher. And she started getting phone calls like left and right. So, but then once they would get on the phone with her and hear that she was a female, she actually had a team tell her, and she didn't say like which team, but a team told her that they would never hire a woman.
Wow.
Yikes.
So not sure who that was. But
if we ever find out.
Yeah, exactly. But her favorite quote, which is just like so powerful to me, is a Billie Jean King quote, and it's "pressure is a privilege." Which I just really love that. And then I read this interview that she had done where they asked her, "How do you motivate your players?" And she said, "By loving them, by letting them know that they have a role, they have a position, whether they're playing every day or they're not playing at all. And then at the same time, also creating high expectations and letting them know that those expectations are because we care about them." And that is just like, so that's such a Nebraska answer, to be honest. Like, I grew up here in Nebraska playing sports, and that's like the kind of coaching style that worked best for me. Like, I needed like validation, and I needed to hear that I was doing a good job. And if I was sitting on the bench that day, I needed to hear like, you know, your role is important still, like in practice, you're the ones they're practicing against, you know, when you're like on the junior varsity team or whatever. And it's like, you're still important. So I feel like just that kind of like coaching style is effective for a lot of people. They like just need to hear.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, scarcity and fear, I feel like, is so often used in coaching, especially with like high school and college kids. And it's something that's established really early on, and it's just never ultimately effective in the long run. It's not something you want people to get used to reacting well to.
And it's just so funny because my sister, she played college volleyball. She played Division II, but she had such a different reaction to, like, she would react well to a coach who was a little more like rough around the edges. And it was just like, to her, it was like music to hers. It was just like in her head, she was able to just be like, F you, you know, and like turn around, yeah, like, I'll show you. But to me, that just would like beat me down.
Yeah, me too.
So that made me love her even more when I read that.
Yeah, when you're competing at such a high level, though, like in any form of professional sports, like the pressure is on just in the nature of the job. So I think it becomes even more important in those coaching positions that obviously we're going to set high expectations for you. We're going to challenge you. Like, the expectation is where it's at. This is the professional league, you know?
Yeah, you're here for a reason. Like,
right. But that pressure, it exists just because of where you're at in the nature of your job. So
yep,
very cool.
Totally.
Well, we're talking about the Yankees affiliate teams, and we might as well touch on the Red Sox. But this coach, Bianca Smith, she also has a very strong Yankees tie. So I think that's a really fun piece about her. And I just really dove in and consumed a ton of content about her because I think her story is really fascinating. But she is the first Black woman to coach in professional baseball. And she was affiliated with the Red Sox minor league system. So according to a 2021 New York Times article by Juliette McCurr, Smith's father, Victor Smith, said that Bianca took to the game quickly and she would watch entire 9-inning games back before the pitch clock, even as a toddler, because she had an unusually long attention span, but she really enjoyed watching her mother, who was a lifelong Yankees fan, cheer for her team. So she grew up watching games on her own during the day, and she would stay up late just to watch like classic baseball movies like we were talking about earlier, The Sandlot, Angels in the Outfield. I forgot about that one.
I did too.
Yeah. And Rookie of the Year were some of her favorites. And she actually didn't start playing in any capacity until she was 12 years old when she started playing softball, but she was always more into the mental side of playing the game. She was very small but nimble, so base running was always her specialty as a player. She actually used her allowance at 12 years old to buy her first baseball jersey, which was a #2 Derek Jeter jersey for her mom's favorite player. So that was her first baseball jersey.
We love her already.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So even as a kid, Bianca had the mindset of an analyst. She liked to study how plays unfolded, and she enjoyed trying to predict the manager's next move. She went to Dartmouth for college, which was also her parents' alma mater, and her baseball obsession continued. Her stepfather shares that this was evident in the family cell phone bill, which I thought was pretty funny. He said there would be a huge spike in her cellular data, and she would say to us, "Oh, sorry, but the Yankees are just doing so well. I just had to watch the games." And he said that's how he always knew when baseball season had started. I can relate to that for sure. Oh, there's that MLB subscription again. Don't mind me. Her mother actually sadly died from cancer when she was only 44 years old. And that really sparked Bianca to be even more determined than ever to make her dream of working professionally in baseball and her mother's dream for her a reality. So she went on to attend grad school at Case Western University in Ohio. And not unlike our other women we've talked about so far, she got dual degrees in business and sports law. And her goal was to become a general manager initially in Major League Baseball. The New York Times reports that 15 minutes into her conversation with Case Western's baseball coach while she was in grad school, his name is Matt Englander. And within 15 minutes of their conversation, he ended up naming her the team's first baseball operations manager. Englander is quoted saying, "She deserved a chance because she was so smart and passionate and probably loves the sport more than I do. I don't subscribe to the MLB Network and watch old MLB games. I don't stay up until 3 a.m. watching the Padres play the Marlins or watching the Indians spring training games. But Bianca, she does." Oh, I can relate to her, man. So from then on, Smith did not miss a practice or a game. She pitched to batters at batting practice. She scheduled team travel and meals. She helped coach circuit training. She watched video of hitters and she sent the coaches her critiques. And then she went on to get an internship with the Reds in 2019, which was really a big turning point for her and her ultimately deciding that she wanted to coach. and that was like what she felt her calling really was instead of front office work. So in her downtime in the baseball operations department, she would watch practice from the stand. She would take notes. She ended up catching the attention of Donnie Ecker, who was then the assistant hitting coach for the Reds. And she told him that she was interested in coaching and offered to help on the field. So the Reds manager, David Bell, encouraged her to bring her glove to batting practice. By the end of her internship, Smith wore a Reds jersey with Bianca on the back, and she helped to practices by catching throws and warming up the coaches and players. And on game days, she was in the clubhouse analyzing hitters' swinging decisions. So for a stretch after graduate
jersey.
Wow. Right? I'm like, I want to be a Reds fan now. I'm a Bianca Reds fan.
I'm a Bianca fan.
This is another really cool, kind of similarly to what you brought up about Rachel having to travel all over the world and do, I mean, anything and everything to just kind of stay relevant and keep working on where she wanted to get to go. So there was a stretch for Bianca after graduate school where she was applying for full-time positions in baseball, and she actually held 8 jobs at once so that she could pay her rent.
Wow.
She was sorting packages at a UPS warehouse at night. She was packing online orders at Target. She worked the cash register at Dollar Tree. She drove for Uber Eats. She was a tour guide and a youth academy coach for the Texas Rangers. She was a ticket taker for the FC Dallas. And for extra baseball experience, has got to get that in too, while you're trying to make money, she was a volunteer assistant coach at the University of Dallas. Again, back to those volunteer coaching positions.
Wow. Oof. That's crazy. That's so inspirational.
It is.
It's insane. I read in this article that sometimes she would have just 30 minutes to get from one of those jobs to another. I mean, I assume so because she's doing so much. And she was basically existing on Lunchables and Pop-Tarts.
And probably not sleeping.
Yeah, seriously. Because who has time for that when you got 8 jobs?
Wow. That's just goes to show, like, if there's something you want, go after it.
Yeah. You're going to figure out how to get it. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is also kind of similar to what you talked about with Rachel having to apply over and over again and taking note of the disparity there. Was before getting the Red Sox job, she told journalist Juliet McCurr of the New York Times that she reached out to more than 100 Division I colleges for coaching positions, and she got responses from 26 of them. Only one ultimately offered her a position, she said, and it did not offer to pay her enough to justify her moving for that job. She applied to 40 college baseball operations positions. She only got 3 interviews and no offers. And she ended up actually circling back on those jobs. And she noted that only one of those 40 jobs went to a woman, and 95% of them went to white men. Sadly, I'm not shocked, but
yeah.
She is quoted saying, "I'm perfectly aware that at least on the college level, I am more qualified than the majority of coaches getting hired." She said, "As a Black person, I don't feel like I face the discrimination in sports that I do as a woman."
Wow.
Yeah. So even when she walks out of the dugout. Yeah. Even when she walks out of the dugout wearing her team uniform now, she has questions, you know, asked to her like, "Well, which player are you dating? Or which one is your son? Or are you coaching girls baseball?"
Wow.
I listened to this interview that she did on a podcast that maybe we can drop in the show notes because it was really interesting. She did an interview on the Black Baseball Mixtape with Mark Cheatham, and she shares that all the players at the professional level have been super welcoming to her. She said that the players don't care who you are as long as you want to help them and you can help them. She also talks about her coaching style. She said that she empowers players to always ask questions of her. And if they do not fully understand the drills or the direction that she's giving, she says if she can't explain it and she can't make them see the value in it, that they shouldn't be doing it. So she likes to help players see the why. And that's something that I think is just another big coaching, huge stamp right there.
Yeah.
She also encourages players to create their own drills as long as they can tell her why it works for them. Got to find the why. She also speaks of not wanting to be remembered for being the first Black woman coach in professional baseball, but instead for her contribution to the game and to her teams, the same as any other coach. And I'm sure a lot of them feel that way. As like,
yeah,
it's cool to be a trailblazer, but like, I don't want to be remembered for that reason alone. I want to be remembered just the same as another great coach would, if regardless of gender, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so exactly the vibe I've gotten from, or not even the vibe. Like, I've read a lot of interviews that Rachel has done, and
it has to be exhausting.
That's what she says. Like, I don't want to be remembered that way. Like, I don't want special, you know, attention.
Yeah, there's actually something more interesting about me as a coach than the fact that I'm a woman.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Smith was originally hired by Boston in January of 2021, made her the first Black woman to coach in professional baseball history. She first served in a part-time capacity before being promoted to a full-time role with the rookie-level Florida Complex League last year. And the person at the Red Sox who first identified her potential was Molly Harris, who was the team's senior talent acquisition specialist. And this was another interesting part of the podcast interview that I listened to her speak on, is that she was initially kind of recruited for baseball operations and a number of different things. And they had like dozens of conversations with her and ended up finding that there was, you know, more specific coaching roles that she would be best suited in. But they were looking, you know, to find diverse candidates. But in order to hire a diverse candidate, they wanted someone with an Ivy League education. She had two graduate degrees, one in sports business and the other in sports law. She had internships with the Cincinnati Reds and the Texas Rangers, and one with Major League Baseball, where she helped with the draft. So college coaching experience. She has certifications on multiple software programs that analyze pitching and hitting. She's got it all.
So again, going extra, extra, extra mile.
Yep.
To where, like, they can't say no.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But, like, that's bullshit.
Yeah. Be so good they can't ignore you. That's the way in.
Yeah.
Alex Speer of the Boston Globe reports that Smith's contract expired at the end of the 2022 season. So the Red Sox actually offered her a multi-year deal to continue coaching in the organization, but she turned it down to pursue other opportunities. So she's quoted in this Boston Globe article by saying, "The offer was still a coaching position. It just wasn't where I wanted to be. I just decided that it was a better fit for me to try something else. I absolutely love my time there. And I even told them that I would love to come back if the position was a good fit." So very excited to see what is next for Bianca Smith. Excellent that she got her foot in the door and she got her name out there with the Red Sox. But one more fun fact is that Bianca's mom, who introduced her to the love of the game, as we mentioned, was a lifelong Yankees fan. And she hated the Red Sox so much that when Bianca won tickets to a Red Sox game while she was in college at Dartmouth, she was awarded it to students who attended the most varsity sporting events. So she got these free Red Sox tickets, and her mom got very angry with her that she even considered taking the free tickets and attending a game at Fenway. So there are some fun articles and stories out there about, you know, how she thinks her mom is going to come back and haunt her from the grave for working for the Red Sox.
Yes.
that was pretty entertaining as
gosh,
well.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew you guys would appreciate that as much as anybody.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. It's like we could never even think about dating. Like back in the day, I could never think about like dating a Red Sox fan. Yeah. I kind of brought them home to my dad.
Oh.
Yeah, right, Mads?
Things first. Sit down.
Yeah.
Mads, you've got another one that is really like a barrier breaker too, that's been in the news a lot, right?
I think so. Wait, are you talking about Veronica Alvarez?
Oh, no, but go for it. Her too.
Oh, wait. Okay. You were talking about Alyssa?
Yeah, because she was like the first on the field coach in major leagues, right?
Yes.
Alyssa Mankin.
I wasn't sure if someone else had her, so I didn't do her. I mean, I have some.
We'll mention her now.
Yeah, we can mention her.
I think she's probably like the most reported on because she's actually been in more of a visible position than any of the other ones.
More in the spotlight.
Yeah.
I mean, I could do a little bit of both because honestly, like, I feel so bad. Like, you give us this entire like amazing story, and I honestly don't have much on Veronica
Well,
Alvarez.
It's crazy. There's not a ton out there about a lot of them. So that's a good point to bring up as well, that, you know, I think because Bianca Smith had that, you know, not just the first, she wasn't just a first woman coach. She was a first woman of color coach. And it's just another good way to draw attention to like always celebrating the first or whatever, but all of these women are making history, and just to draw any kind of attention that they're out there is important.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I feel bad for literally having like only a few sentences, but as long as we're mentioning her and acknowledging her, I mean, maybe next time I can, you know, have a little bit more about her. But for now, I have Veronica Alvarez. She was a baseball catcher, and she was a member of the United States women's national baseball team, which won a gold medal at the Pan American Games. And she earned a scholarship. So I guess before that, actually, she earned a scholarship at Villanova to play for 4 years and graduated with a bachelor's degree, Bachelor's of Arts in Communications, with a minor in sociology. So after graduate, I cannot speak. I really can't speak.
Oh, you're good. I kept doing the same thing. I'm just saying there's that you're sociology, psychology stuff again.
I was like, how am I not able to pronounce this word? It's been a long weekend.
It's
guys.
Sunday night. Like...
yeah. I'm like, I really just, my brain's just not functioning right now. But so anyway, after graduation, she spent 1 year playing softball in Spain, which I thought was pretty interesting. Oh, so she went back to Spain, came back to the U.S., and the Oakland Athletics had her as a coach for spring training. So I think she's been doing that for like every spring training. I think she's still doing it. Well, she did it this past spring training. That's all I have. Like, there's no story. And I know
the through line that you pointed out here is that I didn't realize that you said she was a catcher. Rachel was a catcher. Yeah. Christina was a catcher. Catchers are like so important as leaders of teams, and like I think a lot of them, or especially the best of them, kind of organically become coaching roles within their organizations. Yeah. So that's really interesting.
It's always the catchers.
Yeah.
And then, Bichana, who do you have next?
So I have Justine Siegel, but I was also going to just give us a quick few lines on Alyssa Natkin, because I just love her. Wondering. And the Yankees opened up this year against the Giants, so it was really cool. Like, we went to the outfield just to kind of watch the Giants like warming up and having their batting practice, and she was out in the field, so it was really cool to see her. And I think I did post a video of her on the Babes Babes.
I think I saw her page. When I was with you.
Yeah,
I think I was with you, right?
Yeah. Sure. So I really wanted to be like a psycho and yell out, but I'm sure she's used to that, so I did not do that. But yeah, it was really
cool.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
sorry.
She got a nice ovation.
Yeah,
she got a nice ovation on opening day.
Yeah, she did.
That's awesome. From an opposing team.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So as you mentioned, she was the first female coach to coach on the field. She was hired in 2014 by the Giants to work as their chief information officer. She had a background in sports management. So that's how she started. And then in 2020, they obviously upgraded. I'm at a loss for words here too. Promoted her to first base coach in a game against the Oakland A's. So she was the first female to ever coach at first base. And yeah, she continued on. And her husband started a baseball school.
Oh.
So I don't know what that all entails, but I think that's interesting as well.
Yeah
that is.
So we will move on to Justine Siegel. She is an American baseball coach, sports educator, and founder of Baseball for All. She started a nonprofit based on the disparity in or the gender disparity. In 2009, she became the first female coach of a professional men's baseball team. So she worked for a team in the Canadian American Association. And then in 2011, she became the first woman to throw batting practice to an MLB team, the Cleveland Indians, during spring training. In 2015, she was hired by the Oakland A's for a 2-week coaching stint. So just a 2-week instructional stint. And she became the first female coach employed by an MLB team, like just on that 2-week stint.
But hey, they could check that box.
Yeah, right. she also has thrown batting practice to the Tampa Bay Rays, the St. Louis Cards, Houston Astros, and New York Mets. And then she coached the Israel national baseball team in she coached them in the qualifier for the 2017 World Baseball Classic.
Very cool.
Yes.
Yeah, that is cool.
So I read on a little bit about her childhood. She was raised like right outside of Cleveland. So she attended a lot of Cleveland Indian games growing up. And then by the time she was 13, like her father would always sign her up for baseball instead of softball. So by the time she was 13, she had a coach that told her she didn't belong in baseball. She's a girl. Baseball is a boy's sport. So, and she just totally like, she's like, no, that's wrong. So she continued to play baseball despite being discouraged from doing so. And by the time she was 16, she made it her goal that she was going to coach baseball at the collegiate level. So she just kept like plowing through. She attended the Brewster Academy, where she played baseball for 2 years, and Hawkins School. And then in high school, she played third base and she pitched. So that's pretty impressive, because I think that was back in, I don't know how old she is now. I think that was like the 80s, 90s.
Wow.
So that's pretty groundbreaking for that time. And then in 2002, she formed the Sparks, which is the first all-girl team to compete in a national boys baseball tournament. Cool. And there's a documentary about it. It's called Girls of Summer.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So that's another cool thing that we need to add to our list to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then she, like I said, she started Baseball for All, which is her nonprofit. And Baseball for All encourages young girls to pursue their love of baseball, and it educates the public on the importance of equal opportunities for men and women, and provides resources for young girls trying to get into the sport. So if you go to their website, it's www.baseballforall.com. They have a really cool timeline on there that just like outlines women in baseball going all the way back to the 1800s, and just has like important dates from then on. So that's my spiel.
Love it. All these women are so like amazing, and just hearing their stories, they have like such different backgrounds, but in the end they're all like so just like inspirational, and like have all these different talents. Like, it's just so cool to see how hard they work and like where they are now,
and the adversity that they all have,
right?
To have
unstoppable.
Faced.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's crazy when you think about it, of because I surely think, had I seen, you know, somebody like Kim Ng being the general manager of a baseball team now when I was growing up, mm-hmm. would that have completely changed my thought process of like, you know, no one ever told me I couldn't do it, but how big of a difference it makes that now, or like you're seeing Alyssa Knocken on the field when you watch a Major League Baseball game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of impact, you know, we talk about it across the board in entertainment and in politics, but this is just another platform where, yeah, there's no reason why we should have not always been there, but what an incredible difference it makes to actually see women in these roles and how that's setting a completely different precedence moving forward.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I just wish it were amplified a little bit more. Like, can we, you know, like, just let's see it more often.
Mads, are you like one of the only women working on the Penn State like baseball system?
Well, So not well, still can't speak. There are actually three other girls who are doing media right now. So it's like the four of us doing the media part, and then there are some girls who are doing like other things like equipment, analytics, stuff like that. It's
Cool.
mostly guys. I think there are like 30 managers, who each have different roles. They're
Yeah.
like mostly guys, but there are a good amount of girls, so it's great to see because I think the baseball program like really wants that. I got this position through the head coach of the team, who's amazing, Coach Cooper. He was just like blown away apparently by like some of the stuff I was doing and really wanted me to work there. So it's just like super cool that he gave me this opportunity, and I just love how like coaches and just like men in sports in general are really like appreciating what girls can do for their sports.
Yeah, and that your skill and what you bring to the table has absolutely nothing to do with your gender. Because I personally have found myself in male-dominated scenarios of like I was in a drum line in high school where I was one of the only girls. I was in a show where I was the only female character, and it's just I didn't feel different in those scenarios. Like I was another human who had a similar skill set to the people I was working with, and at the end of the day, that's all it is. And that's awesome that you're in an environment where you're being appreciated just for who you are and what you bring to the table, regardless of all of that.
100%.
Absolutely. Well, we will have to talk more about this because it's fascinating. I love hearing the backstories. I know there are more women out there that we haven't touched on. People who are in the business side of it. So we'll have to do another episode, maybe where we touch on some of them and some of the w women in the media.
For sure.
So we will just move on to our Ruth's rundown, which I haven't really prepared anything for this today. But I know we have a lot to talk about. I thought maybe we could just kind of readdress what we talked about in our last episode, which is, who's going to surprise us the most and our predictions. And so I don't know. What do you guys think? Who's
Yeah, let's go.
surprising you? What's,
I have
you want
the
to just go
order
in a
written down.
circle?
Well, I have the order written down of the
Sure.
divisions that we talked in last time. So let's, you want to like go through back through the divisions just so we make sure, because I feel like that'll help us like cover everybody, hopefully.
Yes. Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah. So we started with the NL
West.
West. What's going on there? Anything, any surprises so far? Anything that jumps out among the Dodgers, the Giants, all those folks?
I didn't expect the Diamondbacks to be coming out so strong.
They've had a good start for sure. They're coming to St. Louis. They won. Did they win two out of three against the Dodgers? I was watching most of that series where they were playing the
Two out of,
Dodgers.
I think they did. And that was the opening. Wasn't that the
I
opening
think so.
series?
Yeah. Well, they played. Yeah. So they played each other, I think, at Dodger Stadium, and then they went straight and played each other at Chase Field, too. So they may have had even six games right in a row. But yeah, I got a call out here. My guy Max Muncy, who I talked about on our last episode, he already has six home runs. He was like my hope for a comeback player this year. He's got six home runs. His OPS is almost 950. So Muncy revenge season, maybe. It may have
We'll
begun.
see.
Any specific players that caught your eye in the NL West? Julio Urias was the other one for me
Oh
that
gosh,
I just
yeah.
really like him, and he already has 20 strikeouts and 18 innings pitched. He has a 1.50 ERA. He is 3-0, and personally, like, I am watching him this season because besides Ohtani, obviously, I really think that Urias is going to be like the big free agent starter to watch in 2024.
Yeah, I like him a
I
lot too.
agree. But yeah, I think the Diamondbacks have been kind of the biggest story so far, or biggest surprise in the West. What about the AL West? Anybody over there?
The AL West, I mean, the Rangers are doing pretty good.
Yeah. And that doesn't surprise, I mean, it doesn't really surprise me. What has surprised me is the Astros, like,
I was gonna
not
say,
doing
yeah.
so
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
I don't know what the deal is.
There's a couple storylines like that in different divisions that I'm hoping will ultimately play out differently over 162.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, it's so early, and I know there's some injuries that people have started off with. Like, they don't have Altuve there right now.
Well, like, Peña is not super hot yet or anything. It's, but again, it's the long game. It's, we're at the equivalent of like one football game right now in the season. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm reminding myself personally. Yeah, but it is fun to see what like individual players are doing. I think, you know, since we got to talk about him, we're in the AL West. Otani, he has three home runs and 15 hits already. Oh, and he's also 2-0 with a 0.47 ERA, currently the best in baseball. 24 strikeouts and 19 innings pitched. No big deal.
I would like to say, though, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa has a 0 ERA. So.
Who is that?
Ozuna.
IKF on the Yankees.
Okay, well, I don't think he qualifies for the stats because he probably hasn't pitched enough innings or whatever.
No, yeah, he's pitched one inning.
Oh, my God. I love that. The other day, I put that out. I was like, lowest ERA in baseball. Like,
there's a couple of Cardinals relievers that also have, zero ERAs.
Well, he's not even a reliever. He's
a utility guy.
Oh, that's right.
So Hunter Renfroe is having himself a season so far. He's like out slugging Trout and almost out slugging Otani. So
okay,
yeah, might. I mean, that one kind of surprised me, I guess,
for sure. Yeah, it's always interesting to see who gets off to like a hot start, because over the course of 6 months, like, everybody's going to ebb and flow a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. AL West, one more thing that we've got to mention. Did you guys see the A's have a possum living in there?
I'm so
sad for them. Yeah. Oh, Mads, you have to look at it. It's
A possum living in their media.
Yeah, so like the visiting broadcasters can't use the booth because there's a possum living in there, and I don't know like how they have not been able to get it out, I guess.
That's interesting.
Do you think that the A's will ultimately move to Vegas?
Yeah.
They should move somewhere.
I think Vegas is ready for them.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you guys feel about St. or Salt Lake getting a baseball team?
I think that could be really cool.
I do too.
I think it would be an amazing landscape.
I feel like that area needs something.
Yeah.
Because you don't have a whole lot. Like, it's kind of desolate with, you've got the Rockies, and then you don't have anything between them and the Diamondbacks, and then you don't have anything between them and then the California teams. But like, and then, Oregon doesn't have anything. So you've got like Washington, California, and then Arizona and Colorado. But like, they could use something there.
Yeah, I think it could be really good for the community. And I don't know why I know this specifically, but Dale Murphy, who was a big like franchise player for the Braves, he is from and has lived his whole life, and I think still lives in Salt Lake City. And I feel like he would be like so behind that. And who knows, maybe we'll see him campaigning for MLB to take up shop in Salt Lake. But yeah, I think it would be
great.
You always
bring us like the best little tidbits like that. Like, I didn't.
Random fun facts.
Yeah.
That's all I'm good for. I'm also good for all the news about the NL Central. So why don't we talk about that?
Let's do.
nice segue.
Thank you. First, I'll mention the things about the Cardinals that are going well that I did specifically call out, since, that makes me feel better than the Cardinals overall right now. So Nolan Arenado, happy birthday. Shout out, Nato. He's also celebrating 10 years of Major League service, which is a big milestone for any player. So very cool. Nolan Arenado has 20 hits with 2 home runs. He is batting almost .330 so far this year, and he leads the team in RBIs. So I think I specifically said something along the lines of him having like his best year yet on the Cardinals, being an MVP candidate. And I think he's off to a great start for that. The other one that I'm really proud of that I've said it many times, but I think I said it first here, is that Nolan Gorman, the other Nolan, is also batting nearly 330 with 14 hits, and he leads the team with 4 home runs. His OPS is currently over 1,000, and he has 13 RBIs, which is like on the leader list of all of baseball.
Absolutely.
So he came up last year with the Cardinals, and he was someone that like everybody was really excited about. But, you know, timing is everything with those things. And the other thing that happens in the major leagues is like pitchers make adjustments against you. And he then had to adjust to his weaknesses that, you know, always come out when you've got the best in the game going against you. But he's done it, and he's like a completely different player, and you can't get him out now. So that's been really fun to watch on the Cardinals. And then, of course, I'm sure you guys have heard the big storyline of Jordan Walker, our 20-year-old rookie. He had a 12-game hitting streak in his first 12 games in the big leagues. So he has 16 hits so far and 2 home runs. Insane.
That's so exciting. You love to see that. And you love to see, like, even 12 games in, he hasn't hit, like, a roadblock, because that's so common.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, yeah, that he just hasn't, the moment has not been too big for him, which is crazy and very rare.
Yeah.
And, you know, I will talk about the Brewers prospects too, because they are absolutely crushing it. Okay.
Yeah, they are.
Did you guys see, I know you like to root against the Mets, maybe almost as much as I do, that they scored 19 runs to the Mets 0 runs in their first 2 home games, which were against the Mets. And they hit back-to-back home runs against Max Scherzer, which I love to see. Their payroll is like not even close to half what the Mets is. So,
you always love to see that.
Yeah, but the Brewers pitching is actually currently ranked 3rd in all of baseball, just behind the Rays and the Twins. So the Mets are nowhere on that list right now.
Yeah, and I'm not really surprised. I kind of called that one, because I just felt like they're a little older, and
they are built a certain way. And if things go right, great. But if little things that often go wrong, go wrong.
Yeah.
And that's been my,
and Diaz being out, that was such a sting to them.
Yeah.
I guess anything else in the NL Central that you ladies have caught wind of before I mention the Pirates?
How are the Cubs doing? Like, I feel like they're not doing as bad as.
Oh no. Yeah. They're not bad. I mean, I don't think there's been any like super standout. I mean, Marcus Stroman, I think, is having a pretty good start to the season. He was like their opening day starter. I was kind of surprised to see that. Not that anyone else necessarily stands out in my mind, but I think he's really stepped up as like a leader of that team. And I would like to see him have a good season. I think if he could settle in there, that would be cool. But the Pirates are honestly like the team in the National League that are having a surprise strong start to the season, I guess, even more than the Cubs.
Yeah.
And Brian Reynolds of the Pirates, I think, has made some headlines just with contract negotiations there, and like if he's going to stay or if he's going to, you know, insist on getting traded or whatever. But he has 19 hits, 5 home runs, 977 OPS to start the season. And then the other guy that I want to mention, because I loved him as a Cardinal, and I just really saw something in him, even though he didn't really, you know, perform for the Cardinals, is Johan Oviedo, who has made 3 starts for the Pirates. And the second of his 2 starts were shutouts, where he also had more strikeouts than innings pitched in both of those starts. So his stats don't necessarily line up, because his first one wasn't as good. But I think he's another one to watch that I had not brought up yet.
Well, I have to say, I drafted Saya Suzuki for the Cubs because I just felt like he's so underrated, and I just felt like he's going to have a big year. And then he started year on the IL.
Oh, I was going to say, is he doing anything good for your fantasy team yet?
So his first game back was Friday, and he did hit a home run.
Nice.
His first game back. Okay. So that's one on the Cubs. I'm looking forward to seeing how he does. And then I was really bummed for Cody Bellinger that they gave him a pitch clock or a pitch clock violation.
Oh, did you guys see that? That was so lame.
Obviously, he's so they played the Dodgers this weekend and hit like his first game back at Dodger Stadium, and they gave him a pitch clock violation because the Dodgers crowd was like welcoming him back and giving him a standing go, and
yeah,
because he like acknowledged it basically.
Come on,
like, yeah,
that's horrible.
Your time is up.
Yeah, wow. Like.
I guess since you mentioned Cody Bellinger,
could have just given him a warning, like in that instance.
Yeah, like use some discretion. I totally agree. Yeah. Since you mentioned Cody Bellinger, he made like an amazing catch at Dodger Stadium to Rob. I'm not sure who of a home run, but I was watching
Rob
Refsnyder. Yes, and then
former Yankee.
What's really funny is Jason Hayward, who was released by the Cubs, and I think he's still being paid like over $20 million or something to play for the Cubs, but he signed with the Dodgers, is actually doing some stuff for the Dodgers. I think
I've heard about that.
He had a home run. He made an awesome catch today or yesterday. And yeah, so they just kind of like swapped questionable outfielders there, but seems to be working out for both teams so far.
Interesting. Let's move on to AL Central.
The good old AL Central.
I mean, I think
this is the one we're all like.
We're all like. But I will say, did I not say don't sleep on the Twins?
You did.
Yeah, they give us a run for our money.
They did.
Yankees.
I don't know if you saw this, Kelsey, but they scored 11 runs on the Yankees in the first inning the other night.
Yes, when the Cardinals were not playing so well, us Cardinal fans were like making ourselves feel better by what was going on at your game. Sorry.
Fair enough. It was brutal. But I would rather lose like that than like, so Saturday or no, Friday's game, we played them and our bullpen came in and threw the game away. So like Nestor Cortez, like pitched lights out. They came in, threw the game away. So like, I would rather have it be like that. And you know what you're hitting right off the bat, then like,
yeah, then
have like the most disappointing loss. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oof.
So AL Central. What else?
Yeah. Jose Ramirez, like on the Guardians, he's still got it. He's another one I think people like sleep on or think he's like past his prime or something, but he's batting over 300. He has 18 hits and a home run for the Guardians. Yeah. And he's been like a storyline I've seen. Like he just keeps hitting.
He kills us every time. The other one that I thought, Stephen Kwan, I thought would give us some problems because he just knows how to put the ball in play. But I mean, we handled them okay.
Did Shane Bieber pitch against the Yankees?
He did. And prior to that game, I think Judge and Stanton were both like 0-for-5 and 0-for-6 against Bieber. But we didn't have any problem with him. And I'd have to go back and look to see who like hit home runs. That might have been the game that they both hit one.
Oh, yeah.
So, but I don't know. Yeah. I could be wrong about that.
He's another one that won. Okay. He's another one that over the course of the season, I think. Like, I hope that he has a solid season because I think he definitely has the stuff, but
I hope he
does. And he's off to like a, you know, a mediocre start. My husband's from Cleveland. So
really?
I
didn't know that.
He is now like a full-fledged Cardinals fan because he watches hours and hours of baseball 6 months of the year. But he was never like, he was much more into the Cavaliers, you know, when LeBron was there and the Browns before they became an even more questionable organization. So now he's like, well, Cleveland sports is not that exciting for me. Not that it ever really was. But we like to see the Guardians do well. I hate to say it to you, but.
That's all right. So
keeps it fun. Keeps it interesting.
I'll accept that.
At least I have a tie to it.
The AL Central teams have never really bothered me that much, except for that one pesky. Well, no, they're not even in the Central. Never mind. But I always think of them as being Central because Texas to me feels like Central.
Yeah.
So,
That does seem a little off. Well, let's move to the East, shall we?
Yeah, let's do NL East.
Yeah, NL East. I mean, the Braves are killing it. They've definitely got one of the like sleepy kind of best team in baseball for whatever reason. Like, I don't know why, because they're not making the headlines like the Phillies and the Mets for like shelling out these massive ridiculous contracts, but no surprise to me that they're.
I know. I wonder if it's just because it doesn't come as like a huge surprise. We know that they have power hitters, but holy
yeah, and it's
shit.
Like now the third year in a row that they have been consistently like very competitive, clearly. Mm-hmm, and Acuña Jr. I think is like the most fun to kind of follow because he is, you know, obviously fully healthy and back in a big way. So he's currently second in all of baseball in hits and third in stolen bases. Which the fact that he was out for a major knee surgery and he's one of the fastest people in the league is just insane.
It is.
And then he has an absolute rocket of an arm from the outfield as well. So he's the full package, absolute star. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's great. I'm surprised the Phillies are not doing well.
That really surprises me.
They're another one overall that's like off to a slow start.
And Trey Turner, like specifically because he was just killing it in the World Baseball Classic. And then he comes over and seems to be kind of struggling.
Yeah, it's weird.
But, you know, Jorge Soler, I did have my little Jorge Soler call out.
You did.
He's not hitting for average quite yet, I would say. But so far out of his 11 hits, he has 6 doubles and 4 home runs. So the guy is hitting for power. I'm going to hope he starts to hit for average as well. And because that Marlins offense needs him.
Yeah.
He's kind of the center of it with Jazz Chisholm. So.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep my word for me. Soler.
I will say that was an impressive call out. So.
Yeah. Right. I feel like I like cherry picked that one.
Yeah, kind of you did.
All right. Well, we talked about the Mets enough. So let's just move on to the AL East, shall we?
Let's do.
I guess we have to address the Rays.
Yeah.
Who saw that coming? Did you have that on your bingo card? Because I did not. Was not on my bingo card.
No. It was like,
they lost finally, though, right?
And I want to point out, like, they don't even have Tyler Glasnow right now, which, like, arguably their best pitcher.
Yeah.
Scary stuff. Scary stuff.
At least they got 2 losses. I think they won today.
They did. But we're only 4 games back. So.
Yeah.
We're just not looking at the standings yet. Let's just not even.
It's too early.
Maybe we'll talk about that next time a little bit. Like, when is it too early to look at what things? Because that would be interesting.
Yeah.
But I'm saying it's too early to look at the standings, okay?
Interesting because the worst team in the AL East, Boston, is actually at 500 right now. So there's no team that's really bad in the AL East. Like, every division.
Everybody's pretty even.
Which
AL East, I feel like we kind of mentioned that in our last episode.
Well, what's really everybody. Yeah, sorry. Everybody's playing everybody. So it's definitely shaking out differently. And teams based on like their schedules is really dictating a lot of it for at least the first couple months.
Yeah.
Because of how they're all playing each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's totally different. But we should call out Adley Rutschman, the hotshot young catcher for the Orioles.
Yes.
Because he has 20 hits, 2 doubles, already 4 home runs.
He's so impressive. I mean, it was like so painful when we played them because every time he came up, I mean, there was one game that he was like 5 for 5. But as painful as it was really fun to watch him. And it is exciting for the O's to like see their fans be finally like into it again. Cause the last several years, it's just been like kind of boring to play them. But
now they have guys who, come in and you know their names because you've heard of them before they even play your team.
Cool. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of guys you've heard of when you play their team, Vladdy G and Bo Bichette of the Blue Jays are both top 3 in both batting average and hits so far this season.
Yeah.
And the Cardinals started out playing them. So that does not surprise me at all.
Yeah.
So, those are my AL East notable call-outs thus far. What are the Yankees doing?
Do we have some notable call-outs? Our rookie, Volpe, Anthony Volpe.
He looks good.
He's fourth in stolen. Is he fourth in stolen bases?
I think so. I think.
Well, he stole two in one game the other day, right?
Yes.
Uh-huh. That's awesome.
Yeah. Which he's done that a few times.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the other day, or was it yesterday's game, that he got a single and then he stole second and stole third, like bam bam.
Nice.
So they're like, this is the Anthony Volpe triple.
I did see that on Twitter. The Anthony Volpe triple. Nice. Yeah. Nice.
But
today he stole a base.
I think the most surprising is Gleyber Torres.
Oh my god,
he started off like in his rookie years. Like he was an all-star in 2018, 2019. And so everyone thought like, oh my God, like this guy is going to be big. And then he had some really rough years there. But my opinion is that he really struggled at shortstop. And so like fans hated on him a lot. And last year they moved him over to second base and he has just, he excelled there. But this year, so I just feel like it took a while to like repair that confidence. And now that his confidence is back, he is just on fire. And he's tied for eighth in stolen bases, or ninth. He's tied for ninth. So not only is he like getting on base, he has like one of the best on base percentages.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. You got to get on base to steal bases. So,
yeah. Gleyber's off to a very hot start. Judge had an on base streak going since last season that sadly got broken up, but it was like, what was it, 40 something?
Oh wow, 40. That's always cool when they like carry it over from the season before.
From last season, yeah, it was from like August. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And he hit the first home run in all of baseball, right?
He did.
Nice.
And we were both there for it.
Yes, that was insane. I can't believe I didn't have, I wasn't recording it with my phone. Like,
I know,
I don't know what the hell I was doing. Well, I was just so into it. Like,
yeah, you were there. It's okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was recording his walk up song and tweeting, oh my God, like, this is the moment I've been waiting for, seeing if Aaron kept his walk up song, which he did.
Yes.
And I'm like tweeting out, and then boom, hits the home run. I'm like, I like stop tweeting. I like start recording. So I got the end of it. I got him running around the bases, but I didn't get the actual home run, which I usually do when he bats. I've seen 14 live Aaron Judge home runs. So
another notch in your belt.
Yes. The other thing I want to call out is Garrett Cole. He is freaking,
I was going to call it out if you
insane.
Didn't.
In 28 and a third innings pitched, he has a 0.95 ERA.
Yeah, I think he has the most strikeouts so far as well, right?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. His first game he had in six innings pitched, he had 11 Ks. He pitched nine innings today, pitched a shutout.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't believe they let him go nine innings.
Yeah, I was surprised.
I mean, we have so many guys on the IL right now, and like, you know, with Carlos or Rodon. And then with Severino, and we had another like surprise in a rookie, Johnny Brito. Obviously he's the one who gave up the 11 runs the other night, but in his first two outings, insane. Like it was like, who is this guy?
Wow. Yeah. Lights out. I mean, he pitched a perfect game. Well, not really a perfect game, but the innings that he was in, it was a perfect game, in spring training, which everyone was like, oh, it's just spring training, but it's so impressive. Let's see what he does. And then he came up to the big leagues and did the same exact thing. I mean, he didn't pitch a perfect game, but he was lights out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of pitchers, I think, are able to come up and do that when there's not as much like tape on them. Because the Cardinals had a really rough game against Dylan Dodd in his first start good pitching prospect for the Braves, who is actually from like Central Illinois, and he went to community college with one of my cousins. And so I like knew all about him, and he just completely shut the Cardinals offense down. And I don't know, I haven't followed up to see like if he got a start again with Max Fried on the injured list, but that's huge for them still, for their confidence to be able to go out and do that against the best hitters in baseball. And then like, yeah, of course, like hitters are going to make adjustments against you as more tape comes out, but you get to make those adjustments too. So that's really cool. It'll be interesting to see. Do you guys think that he'll stay up for a while?
I think he will. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Yankees aren't one to like, be like, get him out of here. You know, like, yeah. If anything, they'll give him too much, like too long of a leash.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think the worst thing, again, going back to that confidence thing, I think the worst thing you could do is just like send him back down right away. So,
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see what happens this week.
Yeah.
Well, we're just over a couple weeks in. I think it seems like we've been starving for it. And so now we're just consuming it constantly. And it feels like so much has happened, but it's important to remind ourselves that we've just barely begun.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like
we'll have plenty to talk about in episodes to come, because that was just only from a couple weeks.
Definitely. Yeah. We'll have to, maybe that'll just be our little, like, the way we do it. We'll just touch on all the divisions. That seems to be like a good system.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
Our Ruth's rundown of the divisions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, everybody, thank you for joining us for the fifth episode of Babes Babes. You can find us on Twitter at Babes Babes Podcast, on Instagram at on Instagram at Babes Babes Pod. You can find me on Twitter at 90zinkskid.
You can find me everywhere. Twitter, Major League Mad, TikTok, Major League Mad, Instagram, Mad Eisen, and YouTube, Major League Mad again.
She's your TikTok content because I'm too old for that, I guess. But I'm at K-Bird Tweets on Twitter and at peace.love.baseball on Instagram. And the Babes are going to be on Peace, Love, and Baseball this upcoming week as well. So you've got to listen in. I think it'll be a really fun way to learn more about them within baseball, but also a little outside of baseball as well. So that should be fun. I'm super excited to have you guys on and to share a little bit of both with our listeners.
So excited. Yeah, I can't wait.
All right. That's a wrap.
See you in a couple weeks, y'all.